Fighting to be free from Jewish slavery. That's where we're at, folks. Welcome, everybody. All right. Haven't been able to get a hold of Pastor Martins. I have a feeling we got bitten by the time change monster. I tried to get a message to him about America jumping ahead 1 hour, and he stood us up. He stood us up. He's late. All right, so I don't know. I tried to send a message, but he may not have, because he usually just accesses the internet, maybe 20, 30 minutes before showtime, and so he's going to be half an hour late at the very least, looks like. So anyway, I'm going to continue with the story of Nicholas Van Rensburg. I'm going to pick it up in Chapter 7, where Nicholas has several visions, and he previously had prophesied to General Della Ray, and this is a few paragraphs down at the beginning of Chapter 7, where he predicted a second conflict between the Boers and the Brits, and it was clearly terrifying for Nicholas Van Rensburg himself. He was uttering these prophecies while with glazed eyes and looking and sitting still like a person possessed by this vision. And General Della Ray rubbed his hands across his face and murmured after hearing this dire prophecy, "May God keep us safe. Return to your men, for we have to ride. If you see something again, please tell me immediately. Be careful who you talk to about this, for the men will not believe you and only laugh at you, but come to me." Jan van Wyk, or Wyk, W-Y-K, walked a little way with Van Rensburg and then asked him, Klasse, that is Uncle Klasse, does this mean that we are going to lose the war? And what will the English do with our women and children? Why will our homes and farms be burned? What does all this mean? Yeah, this vision was very realistic and totally came true. Nicholas Van Rensburg only shrugged his shoulders, for he was still too shocked and dumbfounded to think clearly, because he made this prophecy in the presence of the general and a bunch of soldiers. Quote, "I hope it was nothing, only a nightmare, nothing else," Jan van Wyk said before they parted. However, what neither he nor General realized was that the prophet Nicholas van Rensburg was born that night at Twangs at 16th October 1899. Okay, the prophet, not the prophet in him was born that night, 16th October 1899. This vision came only 5 days after the outbreak of the war, and at that stage, not even the English soldiers could have dreamed of the horrors, the scorched earth policy, and the murder camps launched by Lords Roberts and Kitchener would result in. Okay, yeah, this was scorched earth policy and basically genocide of the Boer people. From then on, until the end of the war in 1902, more than 26,000 old people, women, and children would die, and more than 63,000 houses and farms destroyed by arson. So Van Rensburg's vision was totally true. Okay, so we have a prophet. What's the biblical definition of a prophet? One whose prophecies come true. And that's what was happening when, of course, they required interpretation. They weren't all literal, but some of them were very literal. So, Nicholas's battle against Satan. Okay, so if you have the document I put in the chat room, you can search for the word Satan to find it. It's in Chapter 7, which is a long chapter. But if you search for the word Satan, you'll get to this stage of the chapter. What few people knew at the time was that throughout his lifetime, Nicholas Van Rensburg had been waging his own personal war against Satan. To him, Satan was real, and he constantly felt this evil force snapping at his heel. Yeah, I've got bruised heels too, right? We all do. Okay, so, yeah, and anybody who sees these visions knows that they are caused by some evil force. Not of this world, okay? But Paul said, Satan is the prince of the air. Okay, what air? Well, the atmosphere. He lives in that atmosphere, but he has children in shoe leather who stomp around the planet, causing us trouble all the day long. So he felt this evil force snapping at his heels. His first physical contact with Satan occurred that night at Tuang's, when he saw the vision of torture and death of thousands of women and children in a war only just begun between Boer and Brit. About what actually happened during those midnight hours, Van Rensburg said, quote, "I went to bed and fell asleep. During the early morning hours, I suddenly woke up. I then saw a vision to this side, indicating southwards. We were among thorn trees surrounded by troops. I then turned to the other side, looking to the north. From the west, I saw many women and children coming, and they were fleeing. I saw the whole of that part of the earth was blackened. I saw vast destruction over the whole country. My anxiety became so great that I wanted to flee into the wilderness to be alone and not return. My thoughts became confused." And so this, the Ezekiel, Daniel, Ezra, and all the prophets of the Old Testament all were terrified by the visions they saw. They couldn't believe what they were seeing and hoped it wouldn't come true. But, of course, it did. "My thoughts became confused, and suddenly I knew that satanic powers were trying to destroy me. That was when I hid under the bush where Jan van Wyk and others found me. General Koos de la Rey then sent me home to recover. At my farm at Reitgul, I could not settle down. My heart was restless, and shortly afterwards, probably because of the time change, right? Because this morning I did a brief report about how time changes, especially the fast forward that we go through every spring here, causes heart attacks and strokes, etc., because it upsets people's circadian rhythms, and it's not a good thing. Anyway, and makes people break appointments unknowingly. So I hid under the bush, and then my heart was restless, and shortly afterwards I left to rejoin the commando. However, I was fighting a greater battle against the devil than against the English. Satan was attempting to drive me back to the desert to kill myself in the wilderness because, he said to me, everyone laughs at your visions, and nobody will ever believe you." Okay, so Satan is telling him, "You're a worthless prophet. Nobody will believe you anyway." "I drove him away, but every time he returned, at times he was gray in color and other times he was black, a hideous being that did not appear human. For many days I wrestled with him before he finally went away. I then had an ulcerated hand and was hospitalized at Boshof. I was really ill with this hand, cousin." The term cousin was commonly used among Afrikaners to address each other. "The devil would often still waylay and torment him. But Nicholas would never again have any doubts about the sense and meaning of his supernatural gift. It placed him on a more intimate footing with his people and strengthened his love for his country." Of course, for his people, he's fighting against the devil for his people. "As servant and prophet, this gift was from God and had to be used in service of his people, the Boer nation. He used the Bible more often instead of his visions to bring consolation and hope to his people during the war. In later life, when a friend asked him whether the devil was still tormenting him, he replied, 'Yes, my friend, he will not change, but as long as I cling to my God, his word, and my people, I will remain standing.'" Van Rensburg was sent home to recover shortly after his vision at Tuang's. He was a physical wreck, and authorities are of the opinion that he never fully recovered from his shocking experience. Well, tore up his hand for sure. It comforted him to know that the general believed him, but it was not enough because nobody else did. In fact, the general told him that his visions are so shocking that he shouldn't tell anybody else, but obviously had to tell a few people within his circle. So, anyway, His long-standing friendship with General Koos de la Rey began at Tuang's. The general never forgot their first conversations. Quote, "Who would ever have thought this at the outbreak of hostilities?" he wrote later. "No wonder the burghers thought Nicholas was insane." However, he was not insane. "During the nearly 3 years of war, Van Rensburg's supernatural gift found its greatest expression. One reason why more people began believing in him was the fact that General de la Rey took him seriously. Although a military genius, de la Rey was also a pacifist, a man who in principle was firmly opposed against all violence of war." Well, that all generals should be like that, right? Engage in hostilities only when you have to. heading here, subheading, the field preacher. During most part of the war, Van Rensburg remained with the commando, General Delarey. Because preachers and doctors became very scarce during that time, he often led the church services himself. Rather than firing at the enemy, he preferred preaching it to the Boers and giving them moral support, which they often sorely needed. He started filling the shoes of a minister, and many people were impressed by his vast biblical knowledge. However, there were others, and if you know the story, he only read one book, and that was the Bible. He never read anything else. Maybe he read some newspapers, I think the story goes. However, there are others who regarded Sears' gift with skepticism. Initially, both President M.T. Stein, S-T-E-Y-N, and General J.M.B. Herzog wanted nothing to do with him. However, they rapidly changed their tune after meeting the Seer as guests of Delarey. He, the Seer, came to warn Delarey that two statesmen should leave urgently as the enemy was advancing to take them prisoner. Stein and Herzog thought this a joke, but Coos Delarey was so insistent they listened to the Seer, they finally agreed to do so. More than 10 years later, when answering questions put by the chosen committee investigating the 1914 rebellion, General Herzog elaborated on what happened on that specific day. Today, it is still an enigma and miracle how a handful of Boers could harass the whole British army throughout the country. In all probability, Nicholas Van Rensburg played no small part in these events. He often foresaw the English movements and could issue a warning to the commanders. How's that for scouting? Scouting ability. "We must move the camp," he would announce out of the blue, "for the English will arrive at dawn." Virtually every time he was right. He also predicted the arrival of messengers correctly. Quote, "General must remain here for a few hours more. I see two men on white and brown horses bearing a letter." The messengers would indeed arrive with important news. Next heading, through the Red Sea. Certain parallels between the Boers and Israelites have previously been mentioned. In the same manner, the Israelites passed through the Red Sea. General DeWitt and his men fled before the enemy through a full river, pursued by the English, who were hot on their heels. However, something occurred which General DeWitt could not explain to his dying day. General DeWitt admitted that he and his men were often assisted by Nicholas' personal messages and or warnings in evading the English forces in the nick of time. One of the most miraculous visions the Seer ever experienced concerned General DeWitt shortly before the death of Danny Terran in September 1900, when the general and his men were forced to resign. Years later, the well-known Reverend J.H. Laubser accurately wrote it down and safeguarded it. Reverend Laubser quotes General DeWitt, quote, "On one occasion, between 400 to 600 men and I were caught in a heavy rainstorm where the Caledon and Orange Rivers meet and were trapped in a corner by the English. Once or twice my men managed to drive them back, but it soon became obvious that the English were getting the upper hand. In fact, I heard later that a message announcing that old Dirty DeWitt was captured had already been sent to England. I realized we were in a hopeless situation and was strongly tempted to raise the white flag. However, while standing there undecidedly, a soaked and bloodied Danny Theron stumbled out of the bushes. He had just swum across the river from Transvaal with a letter from General Delarey. Quote, Coos Delarey wrote that the Seer was with him and said he had seen that my men and I would be in such serious trouble that we would consider surrendering. Pretty accurate vision, I would say. However, Delarey wrote, I must not be afraid. The Lord will provide. Nicholas says there is a large rock on my side of the Caledon. My men and I must enter the water in that spot, regardless of how high the river was running. We must head straight across to where a marula tree is standing. According to Delarey, the Seer added that even the horses' bellies would not get wet, for the Lord would be with us. We would find a group of sleeping Englishmen on the opposite side. Okay, and attack, right? We actually found the rock, but my men thought it was sheer madness to try and cross the river, and I had to lay into them with my sambok, a type of whip, before they would saddle up. Danny Theron, who had meanwhile been attended to and provided with clean clothing and a horse, entered the river with us. To my amazement, we all crossed safely, and the water did not even touch the horses' bellies, for there was a high sandbank exactly where Nicholas had said we should cross over. On the other side, we found the sleeping British and fired on them so heavily that they fled in confusion. Meanwhile, the English on the opposite side were crossing the river on our tracks. They were about halfway when something happened that I cannot explain. Suddenly, all those soldiers and their horses began disappearing under the water, just like Pharaoh and his men at the Red Sea, and several hundred drowned in the Caledon River that day. All right, folks, listen to Nicholas Van Rensburg. Okay, the link is in the, I'll try to paste it again, Lily. I'll see if I can paste it for you. That's the link, Israelect, Willie Martin, Seer. Okay, and I'm in chapter 7 and well into the body of the book, all right? And it's a fairly long book. So let me continue. An outstanding story there about crossing the river, just like the Israelites crossed the Red Sea or Sea of Reeds with Pharaoh on their heels, okay? Anyway, President M.T. Stein and the Prophet. Not long after this incident, General De Wet and 600 of his men were encamped on a farm near Heilbronn and Memel. For more than a week, they never encountered any British forces. During the course of one afternoon, about 3 or 4 o'clock, they noticed a cloud of dust far down the road. It was President M.T. Stein and Nicholas Van Rensburg arriving in a spider buggy. They brought a letter written by General Coos de la Rey to General De Wet. The message read, quote, "I am sending President Stein and the seer to you, for I believe you are encamped in a safe place. The English are on to us, and I thought it best to send them to you to enable them to rest a while." On their arrival on the farm, Rudewal, President Stein laid down, okay, I guess Rudewal is the name of the farm, President Stein lay down in the buggy while General Herzog, who had meanwhile also arrived, read to him from the book, Quo Vadis. The seer decided to stroll around the farmyard and then started talking to Mr. Jack Brebner, secretary to President Stein, where he was resting on his saddle. Suddenly, Brebner called out, "President, you have to listen to what Van Rensburg has to say." President Stein called the seer over, who told him that he was seeing a number of white flags and strange-looking houses next to a ditch. "President," he said, pointing towards Kronstadt, "two horsemen are coming, one on a black and the other on a white horse." The horsemen duly arrived, carrying a letter from Acting President Schockberger of the Transvaal government for President Stein. During a follow-up visit, Van Rensburg, in the presence of General Herzog and President Stein, advised General De la Rey he had seen a vision of British troops arriving on the farm early the next morning before the rising of the morning star. On hearing this, General De la Rey immediately ordered his men to mount up and sent President Stein and Van Rensburg ahead in the Spider, which must be a small buggy. Unfortunately, two of General De la Rey's second-in-command did not heed this warning and remained on the farm. The following day, General De Wet received a message confirming the arrival of the British troops as well as the capture of the two adjutants. That'll teach him not to listen to the seer. One Sunday afternoon, about 6 months before his death, General Christian De Wet told the Hollander of De Wetsdorp, Mr. Cornelius Kruger, quote, "Do you see, Kruger, it was not I nor General De la Rey who was so brave. It was the hand of God," thanks to the seer. In contrast, General De Wet expressed himself as follows regarding his trust in Van Rensburg's visions, quote, "There are many people who do not believe what the seer says, but the same living God in the time of Israel is still living. It was not I who was such a great warrior. No, it was the work of God who strengthened me through the seer." Amen. Very good. Thank you for that admission, General. In contrast to General Kemp, who was always reluctant to give credit to Van Rensburg's exceptional gift to see events beforehand, Generals De Wet and Coos de la Rey unreservedly did so at all times. One day, when General DeWitt and his men arrived at a small stream near Sanaspos to camp there, the seer immediately warned them that the British force was approaching from Bloemfontein, especially to surprise and capture him at this place. General DeWitt immediately heeded this warning and hid his men. Not long after, the British arrived. The general and his men disarmed them, stripped them stark naked, and sent them back to Bloemfontein to tell the story there. You see, the seer saw you coming. Next heading. So, this is a fantastic book. I had never realized there was such a detailed description of the Van Rensburg's prophecies and their fulfillment. So, thank you, Willie Martin, for preserving this book for us. Okay, so, next heading, is my house still standing, Umklasi? During the war, many of the men sought comfort from Van Rensburg, for they accepted that he could see into the future. They would ask, quote, is my home still standing, or has it been burnt down? Do you really want to know? Where are my wife and children? Is my son still alive? There were many worrying questions, and it seemed that Van Rensburg understood these people's needs and fears, and he tried to help them. However, he always answered hesitantly, as he did not want to upset his comrades and interpreted what he saw in such a manner that they were comforted. Okay. So, did you see the house being burnt down or didn't you? I want to know. During those dark, sad times, the seer's understanding and sympathy served as an inspiration for his people. This alone is already sufficient reason to honor his memory. Throughout the years of war, he lived closely to his people, associated with them on a more intimate footing than previously, and this deepened his love for his country and his people even more. He served his people out of love, and his gift was a gift from God in the service of the Boer nation. So it's good. They're not using the word Afrikaner. They're using the word Boer. It would fill a book with hundreds of pages to explain and interpret all the visions of this old Boer prophet. Unfortunately, not all of the visions and predictions he saw during the War of Freedom were preserved, and Boers who fought in that war were no longer living. Those we do know of were those visions which were passed on by traditional word of mouth. The rest which he saw from day to day were never written down. General Delarey once said, quote, if ever a book is written about the old seer, it would be one of the most interesting contributions towards the literature of the history of the War of Freedom, and of course the Boer people, and indeed I think we're reading it now. It has been said by certain historians that the seer advised General Delarey regarding military strategies. This was never the case, for the seer had virtually no military experience and would never have interfered. What, I mean, if your scout can tell you what's coming, you better listen to the scout. The most important aspect of Van Rensburg's advice was that he could see the strength of numbers of a British force and from which direction they were advancing. Such information then was used by General Delarey to plan his strategy. Some of the commanders ignored Nicholas's warnings, often with disastrous results. However, generally, the seer's word was law. Nicholas always remained humble and never enforced his warnings on his seniors or the burghers. He merely passed them on as timely warnings. It never occurred to him to show pride about his wonderful gift. When Van Rensburg spoke, everyone fell silent and listened. Then he would tell his strange visions of battles between Blissbook bulls, rams and bulls, visions of blood and sieves and plows, of black curtains, pails, white papers, black mourning crepe, flowers, ropes, the sun, moon, stars, and comets, just like Joseph, right? Joseph, the youngest of, the second youngest of the 12 tribes, and visions of flags, sickles, and bricks. Perhaps Almighty God ordained that the old seer's visions would not only be noted down by his daughter, but also to live forth by word of mouth, for our history has repeated itself 100 years later. The Boer nation is once again living in that smelting oven of oppression, distress, and devastation. Now, so is the whole world, folks. Next heading, saddle up and unsaddle. Okay, which is it? Saddle up or unsaddle? Mr. J.J.M. Yeats of Jan Kemdorp wrote, quote, "My late father, a field cornet in General Delarey's commando, said not long after the English occupied Klerksdorp in March 1902, General De Wet decided to reoccupy the town. His commando arrived at a spot close to Klerksdorp in the early part of the evening and would camp there for the night. Everyone except Van Rensburg off-saddled, but he remained seated. Father asked, 'What now?' He replied, 'Look, the English are advancing straight at us from Klerksdorp.' Father believed him, as did General Delarey, who ordered Father and two other men to go and determine whether the English were really on their way. The rest of the men were ordered to immediately saddle up again and wait on their horses until my father and his companions return. Father and the two scouts rode a short distance towards the town when they spotted the English commando, but they were moving away from them towards Klerksdorp. After following the enemy for some distance, they turned around, satisfied that no Englishman would dare show his face near the camp that night." Well, so it's exactly as Van Rensburg's vision stated. "On reaching the commando again, they were surprised to see that everyone except Van Rensburg had saddled up again, ready to leave quickly. Van Rensburg, however, rested against a tree trunk while his horse was cropping grass a short distance away. Father asked the seer what this meant, upon which the old man stroked his beard and replied, 'You see, cousin, shortly after you left, I saw the English troops turn around, so I off-saddled.' This lot did not want to believe me. 'You can also off-saddle now. We will enter Klerksdorp tomorrow without having to fire a single shot.' It happened exactly as the seer said. The Boers did not find a single Englishman in the town." All right. Incredible visions by the seer. "The beginning of his grief" is the next heading. Sounds like he had a lot of grief his whole life long. It's a rough life being a prophet whose visions come true. The seer once said to a friend, quote, "A great responsibility rests on my shoulders." Then he quoted from Psalm 78, "Give ear, O my people, to my law. Incline your ears to the words of my mouth. I will open my mouth in a parable. I will utter dark sayings of old, which we have heard and known, and our fathers have told us. We will not hide them from their children, showing to the generation to come the praises of Yahweh and his strength and his wonderful works that he hath done." Of course, this responsibility devolves upon us to keep his word alive until the judgment day. The seer indeed spoke in parables and riddles, and his nation seldom listened, or perhaps they did not want to listen. Right to the end of the war, the seer was treated with a degree of contempt and anger by some of the burghers. On one occasion, they even forced him to ride oxhide as a punishment for the so-called visions with which he naggingly tormented the Boers. We'll find out what oxhide is in a minute. J.F. Van Wyck said, "He, Van Rensburg, saw far too many fierce bulls, which posed danger for our commando, and those bulls also meant nothing, as we could not even slaughter them," right? You were just to be afraid of them and get out of their way. The war council found the seer guilty, and he had to ride oxhide. This means this, the following. The skin of a freshly killed beast was used for this purpose. It was put down on the ground with the hair side up and six elongated holes large enough to insert two hands were cut on either side so that three men on each side would hold the skin. 12 men stood around the hide. Okay, sorry, twelve. 12 men stood around the hide and Nicholas was told to lie down on it. The 12 then lifted the hide, pulling it taut. They threw Nicholas high into the air 5 times in succession. It was a dangerous game, but the seer accepted it with a good-natured, embarrassed smile. The reason for the burghers' hostility started in October 1899, when the seer told General Coos de la Rey that the Boers would not only lose the war — that's the kind of information you don't want to share with the troops — and the English flag hoisted in Bloemfontein and Pretoria, but that hundreds of Boer houses would be torched, farms plundered, and women and children would be captured and taken away. Some of the seer's comrades were so incensed by these predictions that they threatened to shoot him. They branded him a coward and said he was insane and an uppermost traitor. Okay, that's what you get for making accurate visions, okay? If they're bad, you probably don't want to use it, okay? Nibblehorse says, a spider is what the Italians call a convertible car, a sports car with a soft top. Very interesting, okay? Yeah, it's not a real spider, fortunately, okay? Okay, so if you issue, and this is what the Israelite prophets did all the time, when the Israelite prophets issued a dire warning, the Israelites would laugh and crucify, sometimes literally crucify the prophet who was trying to warn them. No, that can't be true. We're God's people. You know, he wouldn't allow that to happen to us. Well, it depends on how disobedient they were. So Nicholas van Rensburg had to endure the same kind of taunting that the prophets of Israel had to endure. I don't know if any of them were actually put to death by the Israelites, but there were many times when they came close. The Israelites came close to putting the Israelite prophets to death. So, however, despite all of this, and his own shock and dismay at the frightening vision, Seer van Rensburg silently endured their accusations and hostility. His comradeship and patience towards them never altered, even after that same vision became reality more than a year later. Throughout the war, the salvation, welfare, and safety of his people were all that mattered to him, so much so that he never mentioned a word to anybody about the suffering he and his family experienced during the dark times of the war and the rebellion. Early one night in January 1901, he and some family members stayed with a farmer, William Bosman, in the Volmaranstadt area. While drinking coffee the following morning, the seer suddenly held up his right hand, and placing his left hand over his eyes, he sat staring ahead a long time. He turned to the farmer and said, quote, "William, I see three cows coming down the road 5 miles away from Klerksdorp on the other side of the mountain. They will be here before sunset. They seem dead tired, exhausted, and urgently in need of attention." The farmer's wife laughed and mockingly told her husband that van Rensburg probably had his eye on the cows, which had been missing for a month already. However, Willem Bosman and someone else rode away to go to and look for the cows. 5 miles on the other side of the mountain, they found three emaciated, terrified women fleeing from the English soldiers. Back at the Bozeman homestead, they told an appalling story. Quote, "The English arrived on our farm, burnt the house with all our possessions, drove our cattle to their camp, and abducted us, a number of children and old people, on an ox wagon, but we three managed to escape during the night." That would have been a fate worse than death, because they were being gang raped as well. The seer's children go to the death camp. Some days after rejoining General Delarey's commando, he saw a vision in which five of his children were captured by the English, and he, his wife, and the other two children remained behind. On hearing this, General Koos Delarey permitted van Rensburg to return to Reitkull to safeguard his family. Arriving home, the seer first went to warn his parents, who were living in the original house at Reitkill, as well as some of the neighboring farmers, to leave the area immediately, as the English were on their way to plunder their homes and capture their women and children. Only a few neighbors and one or two friends believed van Rensburg, and they started preparing to leave their farms. With assistance from a friend, the van Rensburg's furniture and other possessions were stored in one room, which was then sealed with an additional clay wall on the outside, on the inside. This little storeroom was so cunningly built that unless one knew of its existence, the plastered partition could be mistaken for an inside wall. Later that afternoon, while the women were preparing supper for the children, they received a message that the English soldiers were advancing towards Reitkull, and they had to make a hasty departure. Van Rensburg, his wife, and eldest son, Willie, and his two daughters fled into the veld in their horse-drawn cart, driving their cattle ahead of them. Their eldest daughter, Hester, the other four children, and their grandparents, accompanied by other farmers' wives, attempted to flee towards Wolmaranstadt in ox wagons. Two of Van Rensburg's sisters-in-law, Madames Noni van Wyck and Hanny Klassen, were among this group. Noni van Wyck was the wife of field cornet Jan van Wyck, who was present at Twangs during the early years of the war when the seer saw the vision of destruction at the end of the war. It was he who took the Boer prophet to General Delarey. The two children accompanying the seer and his wife began crying from hunger, but there was no time to stop and feed them. They fled throughout the night. At dawn, when Nicholas rejoined the refugees, he was told how some of the wagons, among those being his own and that of Mrs. Van Wyck, got lost in the dark and went in another direction. Okay, war is hell, folks. We don't wish war on anybody, but the Jews keep on bringing it to us. Next heading, kill the children. Oh, I'm sorry, kill the chickens. Big difference between children and chickens. This group also included a neighbor's wife, Mrs. Susara Gertruda Stein, and her children. Years later, Mrs. Stein told her granddaughter, Lynette Baird, of their experience. She said after 2 days of fleeing, they, together with Van Rensburg and family, arrived at the homestead of an elderly farmer. The house was built against a high ridge. The farmer invited them to stay for the night. The old seer immediately asked whether they had any chickens. When the farmer asked why, Van Rensburg answered, "Shoot the dogs and slaughter all your chickens." "Whoa, really? We're hungry." The farmer stared at him in surprise, and Van Rensburg had to repeat what he said, adding, "English troops will arrive here tonight, and I see them passing very close to the house. The dogs will start barking, and the chickens will make noise, and we will all be captured." Wow. But the farmer did not want to know anything and refused point blank to obey Seer's orders. However, Nicholas persisted and eventually persuaded his host to do as he was ordered. Mrs. Stein clearly recalls that the night was clear with a full moon, and from inside the darkened house, they observed a number of mounted Englishmen slowly passing along the base of the ridge. Van Rensburg and company left the following morning to continue the search for the rest of his family and parents. Later, during the day, they encountered a Boer commando closely following the English and the men who told him that the wagons which were lost had fallen into enemy's hands near Corona Fontaine, later renamed Ottosdal. The English initially took the women, old people, and children to Corona Fontaine and burnt their wagons that same night. The seer's parents, four children, and Annie's sisters were sent to the concentration camp at Mafeking in open wagons. The driver of the wagon on which the seer's daughter Hester rode was nicknamed Goodman because he had 5-year-old Letta placed in the care of her sister, Hester. Filled with anxiety and sorrow, the seer rejoined his commando. He already had a premonition that this was just the beginning of the tribulations he and his family would have to bear. All right, folks. I think we're at the beginning of the tribulation. This is the time of Jacob's trouble. There's no doubt about that. Worldwide, and I think actually from World War I on, because we have really not had a moment's peace in the world since World War I. We've had clashes arranged by the Jewish banksters all over the world from then until now. With the major World War III, it looks like it's on the horizon, folks. We'll see. In the murder camps, okay, these were death camps, folks. Death camps, real death camps. Not fake death camps like you read about in World War II, which were a totally, comfortable hotels for the people there, except toward the end of the war when they began running out of food and supplies. Okay. So we're seeing this history repeating itself in our day, and the tribulation for all of us is fast approaching as we have been trying to say in the last couple of shows, that the great starvation is imminent. That's what they're trying to do, to starve us out. The COVID succeeded beyond their wildest expectations in creating fear and panic among our people, compelling people to take these shots full of poison, which can either be instantaneously deadly or lead to a slow, lingering death, whichever you prefer, right? Whichever variant you choose of the shot. And so we're reaching that point in time where Washington's vision is come upon us, where he saw three periods of struggle, the American Revolution, the Civil War, and the Red Cloud from Europe, which obviously refers to the Esau communism coming to America, in which he saw hand-to-hand combat in every city of America. Because why? Because they have armed Antifa and Black Lives Matter against us, and we will have to fight them off. And it may also include Chinese troops, but that's a logistical nightmare for China. I don't think they can manage that. Nevertheless, his vision ended with this, the words that we will win. We will come very close to losing this war, but we will come out on top. Obviously, the cavalry in the sky, ghost riders in the sky, led by Yahshua Messiah, will intervene before we have a total defeat on our hands. Okay, continuing. So, in the murder camps is the next heading. In the concentration camp, caring for her two brothers and two sisters fell on the shoulders of his 13-year-old daughter, Hester. Daily rations were so meager that they were perpetually hungry, and little Hester took in washing to earn a few extra pennies. It's amazing that there were people around that she could do washing for. This kept her busy from dawn to dusk daily, so that 11-year-old Cornelius had to stand in the queue at the ration store to receive the family rations. Mrs. Elizabeth Meyer, another camp inmate at Mafeking, said it was impossible for the handful of helpers to hand out rations to thousands of women and children in a single day. So on Mondays, they queued for meat, which was mostly rotten and inedible. Tuesdays to receive coffee, rice, or sugar, flour, and salt on Wednesdays and Thursdays, and only received a little firewood on Fridays. Every day, people queued from dawn until nightfall to be assisted. That sounds like the queues in the lines in the Soviet Union, because there was never anything in the stores. The Bolsheviks had sequestered all of it for themselves to sell on the black market. On many occasions, the frail fainted in the scorching sun, but the camp authorities ignored them as though they were non-existent. Wow. Under these desperate conditions, Mrs. Meyer said, measles and typhoid were rife in the camp. It was so severe that whole families were wiped out. At one stage, the death total was 21 per day. Next heading, Emily Hobhouse. In her book, The Sorrows of War and Those Who Suffered Them, Emily Hobhouse describes the following, quote, mothers with small children had to wait 3 days before seeing a doctor, and when their turn came around, they were chased away, for, don't you know that all children under the age of 5 years must die? Really? Did somebody give an order that all children under 5 must die? Such a woman returned to her tent with an eternal, relentless hatred towards the enemy. Okay, were these English-run camps where these meager rations were being dispensed? One morning on rising to go and do washing, 13-year-old Hester was aghast on noticing that both her sisters had contracted measles. Van Rensburg had not received any news about his family for some time, as during that period, Delarey's forces were continuously being hounded by the enemy and also had a few narrow escapes. He and Annie would only meet again in the middle of October 1901. However, it was a joyless reunion, for his first words to her were, quote, my wife, early this week, I had a vision of our children in the death camp at Mafeking, and it was not good. I see a ladder reaching from earth to heaven, and our two daughters, Anna Katerina and little Maria Elizabeth, are standing on it while still looking. I saw my sister Betty, who had passed away in 85, appearing at the foot of the ladder. This means that the Lord has sent Betty to fetch our children. They are no longer with us. Unquote. Wow. What a vision to have to listen to. Shortly afterwards, he and his wife received tidings that 10-year-old Anna Katerina and 5-year-old Maria Elizabeth had respectively died of measles on the 6th and 8th of October in the camp in Mafeking. At the same time, two of his nieces, the daughter of his sister and that of his sister-in-law, Nani Van Wyk, had also passed away. 20 years later, these four children would play the leading role in one of Van Rensburg's most important visions regarding the destiny of the Boer nation. Okay, that'd be interesting. Maybe I can, I won't have time today, maybe I can search for that as to what that vision means. After fleeing from their farm, Reitkirl, during that night, Van Rensburg never had the chance to visit his farm again before the end of the war. Once there, he discovered that his friend who had helped him enclose his few pieces of furniture behind the secret wall had joined the English forces. Wow. As a national scout, a traitor to the Boer people, and a friend of Nicholas. Amazing. He informed them of the false inner wall in Nicholas's house. Shortly after, the traitor accompanied a troop of soldiers to Reitkühl, where they dynamited and destroyed the furniture. The day after he and his wife discovered the destruction, he stood dumbly for a long while next to his dismayed and grief-stricken wife, and then spoke softly, quote, "Naked we came into the world, and naked we will leave it." No, if you're in a casket, you'll be dressed you'll be dressed in a fine suit of clothes. All right. Okay, with about 10 minutes left, let's get into Chapter 8. Amazing, amazing accuracy of these predictions. Some literal, some figurative, but amazing accuracy. Messenger of God. The seer never forgot that his gift was from God and he should use it in the service of the Boer nation. And ironically enough, this was at the height of the saddest time in its history, wrote Johannes Meintjes. And like the biblical prophets, the seer never took up the sword against his nation's enemy. He has been sent by God to lead us, one of his fellow burghers said, adding, Van Rensburg was the messenger of God and not his sword. The outcome of the war could have been vastly different for the Boer forces had they made more use of the seer's gift of prophecy. But right up to the end, only a few individuals sought his counsel now and then. Yet every day he saw in broad terms what was happening on the battlefield. In this manner, he correctly predicted the outcome of the last great battle between General Deloray and Lord Methuen, even though he was not spared the distressing outcome of the war. According to Field Cornet Yates, who was present, Deloray meticulously planned the battle between himself and Methuen. Quote, "That evening, after war council, General Deloray sent me to go to and call Van Rensburg to find out whether he had seen anything. Van Rensburg nodded and described his vision. Quote, I see a red Afrikaner bull approaching from Vryburg, or Freiburg, his horns face straight forward. He is anxious to fight. He is brave and strong." Now, I can, now at this point, I think I can interpret this because Seer Van Rensburg knew the difference between Afrikaners and Boers, which most Boer people have forgotten, that the Afrikaners are Cape Dutch descendants of the Jewish moneylenders of the East India Company, the Dutch East India Company. And they were not friends of the Boers. They were misleading the Boers throughout all this time and meticulously oppressing them. Nevertheless, they would pretend to be the friends of the Boers, and Nicholas Van Rensburg understood the difference. So the Red Bull must be these, calls it an Afrikaner bull. "I see a red Afrikaner bull approaching from Freiburg. His horns face straight forward. He is anxious to fight. He is brave and strong. But when he reaches barber spawn, he changes color to a red mottled bull, and his horns are hanging. His courage has fled. He begins to feel weak, but he will become worse, for when he reaches Heart's River, he has no horns. He cannot butt any longer. Then I see him at Tweebos, with a fractured foreleg. Now he is white and hornless and lies wounded in the dust. A young black arrives, throws a rope over the bull's head, and leads him back to where he came from, unquote. And, as an afterthought, the seer added, he must have been disarmed, unquote. The English suffered a humiliating defeat at Klipdrift, where they found Lord Methuen lying in the dust with a wounded leg. He never took part in the war again. So he refers to the English here as a red Afrikaner bull. Very interesting. But of course, according to Pastor Martens, the Afrikaners were in league with the English against the Boer, but the Boer people never fully understood this. Later, when Boy Musman asked the seer why he saw Lord Methuen as a mottled bull, the old prophet replied, quote, probably because his forces consisted of hensoppers, from the term being hands up, a derogatory term for those Boers who joined the English forces to fight against their own people. Wow. National scouts from the Cape, Tommies, Coloureds, and Blacks, a motley crew. There you go. Definitely including the Cape Dutch Afrikaners. Shortly thereafter, the last negotiations for peace began, and once again Van Rensburg described everything beforehand, down to the last detail, telling Deloraine, quote, you will sign with the Englishman's knee. In other words, peace treaty would be signed on English terms. Van Rensburg spoke about many tents near Vereniging, of the flags that would be flying, and he even saw the place where the negotiations would take place. But peace will not be finalized there. I see a Boer house in Pretoria. That is the place. He was correct, for on 31st May 1902, the peace treaty was signed in the house of George Hayes in Pretoria. Even General Barry Herzog was totally stunned and later often spoke of the seer's visions in Parliament. Okay, so many true believers in his lifetime. The sickle of death will be the final heading for today with about 5 minutes left. Some months earlier, Van Rensburg had a vision regarding an event which would take place abroad after the signing of the peace. He saw Generals Botha, Deloraye, and Kemp occupying the front pew of a church in Holland. He then heard the text from which the sermon would be delivered, as well as the psalm which would be sung. According to Deloraye, he had completely forgotten about this vision until the three of them sat in the church in Holland and the identical text and psalm were announced by the minister. I'll bet they were flabbergasted. Meanwhile, the seer returned to Rijkul, where he once again took up his former humble task. Sometimes months would pass without seeing his hero and bosom friend, Koos Deloraye. But every once in a while, the general sent a messenger, Captain Corneels Nieuwenhuis, to ask what Van Rensburg had seen in the interim period. In this manner, Deloraye was given news of the stirring in the Balkan states. Wow! The approaching war, and also about Mussolini's victories in the future in North Africa. At this time, the old Boer prophet saw a very strange vision, one that he could not explain. Shortly after, Deloraye visited him and seer told him about it. At first, though, he spoke lengthily about the Great War soon to break out, so he predicted World War I. During the past week, I often saw darkness descending over the world. It is a darkness in which many nations will be ruined. War is going to destroy millions. But in the aftermath of the war, I see a mourning cloth descending over the world, a darkness when all nations will lament and pray. I see the sickle of death mowing down millions. It is a terrible disease which will cause more deaths than all the battles of the war. Did you think Spanish flu, folks? I did. In those two visions, he saw the First World War and the outbreak of the Spanish flu in 1918, which was caused by the Rockefellers, folks. the beginning of Big Pharma and its worldwide influence. Then he told of the other strange vision. After that, I saw a sharp sickle on the eastern side of Europe coming in from the west. I do not know what it means. Two red flags are draped over a fence and two head of cattle are fighting. I have never seen such a sickle or such red flags. Okay, okay, the sickle of communism, the red flag of communism. The hammer and sickle. Then I spotted my bull, old Pete. Blood was pushing up from inside him and he was angry. Four purple flags are also draped over the fence and they too turn red. Shortly before the Great War, a fountain of blood flowed from Pete, and suddenly the faces of war appeared before me again. Blood raining from clouds, buckets of blood. There is a massive fire burning. There is a yellow brick which becomes soft, and then I saw a huge red flag moving from north to south. Communism, folks. The fire also burnt from north to south. Then everything fades and two red bulls are engaged in battle. Could it be Russia and China? Van Rensburg was silent for some time before asking, "What do you think it means, Umkus? For that fire will continue burning long after the war is over." "Oh, I think I know what it means. I think it means Soviet communism and Jewish Palestine, Zionism and communism, both created by Esau, the red. I think that's what it means. We'll find out, hopefully. However, Delarey had no idea that the sickle represented a communist flag or the purple flags indicated the Russian vassal or dependent states, which would fall into communism. That the melting yellow brick depicted humiliation of Japan. How could he know that the red flag and fire moving from north to south would indicate the onslaught of communism through China along the Pacific Ocean and the South Seas? And the two battling bulls, authorities agree it can only mean that Russia and China would be engaged in a devastating war before the end of this century. This century? Is it soon to start? We'll find out. Thanks for listening. Praise Yahweh. Pass the ammunition. We are dealing with a true prophet of Yahweh. Absolutely no doubt about it, folks. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next weekend. Have a good week and praise Yahweh and protect you throughout the week and the coming years. We're going to need it. Take care. Yah bless, everybody.